Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Laps Factor Podcast. What is up, party people and college lacrosse fans? You're watching episode 277 of the Lax Factor Podcast. I am your host, Ted Hoost. We have a bunch of lacrosse to talk about today. We're going to start with Carolina and Hopkins. We'll talk about Maryland picking up their win. We'll talk about Denver's big win over Cornell, Penn's big win over Delaware, and a bunch more games. Before I get into it, as always, be sure to like and subscribe if you're an audio listener. Share the crap out of the podcast with your friends. And as always, you can go to laxfactor.com and support us that way. We have mug, a new beer, a kind of a can slash pint glass on deck for people who like to drink booze and watch lacrosse. And then we have t-shirts, all sorts of crap. You can get the podcast t-shirt to support us that way, or just some other random t-shirt, all t-shirts designed by me, or at least paid for in terms of the design by me. So these are all Lax Factor originals, and I'm going to shut up and we are going to dive right into the action, starting with Johns Hopkins traveling down to Chapel Hill to take on the North Carolina Tar Heels. Hopkins jumped out to a 3-1 lead after Russell Melendez found Brendan Grimes with 11:43 left in the second quarter. Melendez found Grimes dodging as he's dodging down the left of the crease. Grimes put it off stick near side on Krieg. It looked a little awkward, but 3-1 Hopkins. UNC would answer back quickly to get back to within a goal, and Andrew Price scored unassisted, 9:28 left in the half, knotting things up at threes. Hopkins gave Price way too much room down the left alley. He figured, if no one's going to get on my hands, I may as well lace it past Chase Erlin. He does so, and it's now threes. Hopkins would take the lead back 5-3 off a Jacob Angelus goal with 4:17 remaining in the half. Chase Erlin had an incredible game. He made a stop on the defensive side for Hopkins. The ball popped back up the other way and eventually found its way to Angelus via Dominic Jarnoski. 5-3, Johns Hopkins, a.k.a. the bad guys. Not really. I actually was rooting for Hopkins in this game for some reason. Carolina wasn't ready to go quietly into the afternoon. They answered back yet again. First, Dewey Egan at the 4:35 mark from Dominic Petromala, and 35 seconds later, it was Petromala scoring a man-up goal dished by Logan McGovern that knotted things up at fives. A very quick sequence for Carolina, and at this stage, I'm sweating my bets just a smidge. The goal that kind of sealed it for Hopkins was the final goal in a 3-goal run out of the Jays, started by Garrett Degnan and finished by Russell Melendez with 10:23 left in the third quarter. Melendez stepped down from the top middle, put it stick side low, but with enough speed and placement that Krieg didn't have a chance. It was actually kind of a laser, and you could just see it was literally just out of reach for Krieg. Very tough goal to give up for him. That made it 8-5 Hopkins, and while there was still a lot of lacrosse left to play, UNC never got back to within more than 2 goals, and Hopkins was able to slow burn to this 4-goal victory. In the process, winning me some much-needed loot as I took Hopkins as a 1.5-point favorite, and I took the under. Both hit. We all rejoice, and everybody's happy. Now, something that's been an issue for Hopkins all season, though, late-game penalties that allow teams to stay in games. Hopkins picked up 4 penalties between the 6:51 mark in the fourth and the 5:27 mark. The calls were a slash, a trip. Those were together. That caused Hopkins to have to play 2 men down for a bit, and I'm rolling the highlights so you can kind of see it. During the UNC man up, Hopkins picked up a 3rd penalty. At one point, they were forced to play three men down, but the end result of that entire sequence, no goals for UNC across any of those four penalties, an incredible defensive stand for Hopkins that was more the result of poor shooting out of UNC. Chase Erland did make a great save at the end of that possession. Petro shot toward the end of the sequence that sealed the deal for Hopkins. And yeah, that's it. So once again, Hopkins shot themselves in the foot in a way that let a team hang a bit longer than they probably should have. That four-goal spread could have maybe been a little bit different if Hopkins wasn't playing man down for what seemed like 5 minutes straight. But either way, no harm, no foul. They win the game. They win the war. Everybody is happy. So if we look at what Hopkins did in terms of statistics, Brendan Grimes, 3 goals, 1 assist off 5 shots. Jacob Angelis was just 1-2. Quiet day overall, and he only had 2 shots. So North Carolina did a good job. Now, granted, what I will say with Angelis is he's been such an efficient shooter thus far at this point that, you know, he's normally not taking more than 3 or 4 shots in a game, and he's still putting up 2 or 3 goals, but they did at least keep him quiet in the goal front. But huge day out of the depth in scoring and for Hopkins. Russell Melendez, 2-1. Garrett Degnan, 2-1. So the two attackmen kind of fill it out there for him. And then Jimmy Ayers also goes 2-1. Matt Collison scored a goal late. That was, I think he scored actually the dagger goal. Potentially, he scores 2 goals on the day off just 3 shots. So Hopkins did not get a ton of shots. UNC did a decent job of limiting their shots and keeping pace with them there. As we see, shots were pretty much even. 41-40 in favor of Hopkins. Shots on goal, pretty much even. 24 to 22 in favor of Hopkins. It was 2 more saves out of Erland than Krieg was able to pick up. And then it was clears. That was something I wanted to touch on in this one specifically. Hopkins, perfect 21 of 21 clearing the ball. Carolina, just 21 of 25. Not terrible, but not great. And then Hopkins wins the ground ball battle by a handful, despite slightly losing at the faceoff dot. So that's how they kind of made up for that minor possession disparity. But in the end, Hopkins just played a cleaner game, a better game. They shot the rock well, and Carolina simply couldn't recover. Let's see here. Jonathan Peschko, 2 ground balls, 2 caused turnovers for Hop. So that's not too bad. So yeah, once again, Hopkins wins. I believe that's their 4th in a row here that they've won now. Let's go in to see who we have next for Hopkins. I'm going to kind of cover the winners a little bit more and the losers get left off here. Yeah, Hopkins just gets, it just never stops for them. They've got to play Virginia in Charlottesville on March 2nd. Then they've got to play Syracuse at a neutral site on March 9th. Before then, they get Navy. Navy looks like an easy win at this point, which is crazy to say, but that does appear to be the case. And then Rutgers, Michigan. It doesn't stop here for Hopkins moving forward. The next game I want to talk about here is Maryland and Princeton. Now, a lot of people were thinking this was going to be a close game. With the talent that Princeton bled in the offseason, I wasn't sure about that, and I ended up being correct on this one. Thank you to me. Eric Spanos made it 3-0 Maryland with 5:42 left in the first quarter. Quick dodge up around the right side from X. He gets a step or two above GLE and put it 5-hole past Gian Ficarro for Princeton. Daniel Maltz would score right on the doorstep. Easy dunk on a nice dish from Eric Maliver. Loose ball situation. Maryland recovered and made the Tigers pay. Now it's 6-1 Terps. Princeton would manage to get back to within 4 goals on a couple of occasions, but each time they'd answer, Maryland would get one, sometimes 2, sometimes even 3 right back. So it wasn't a whole lot of action, wasn't a whole lot of excitement in this one overall. If we look at what Princeton did here, I'm trying to find our boy. Coulter Mackesy was held to just 1 goal, 1 assist off of 6 shots. So that's a huge story here because everyone was kind of chirping the shit out of Joey Spallina for getting shut down by Zapatello. I didn't watch this game very closely. I had this on as my second while I was watching some other games. I might even been playing Fortnite at one point because I have a really bad addiction and I had to get my battle pass. For anybody who's as big of a nerd as me, I had my battle pass. I had to get all of the quests in my battle pass, and I did it. I got to 200 with this battle pass, kumbaya and everything. But anyway, I presume Ajax Zapatello guarded Coulter Mackesy. I presume it was Ajax Zapatello that limited him to 1 goal off of 6 shots and also caused a turnover, or at least McCasey had a turnover. But for Maryland here, as we look at what happened, yeah, Zapatello had one cause turnover. Eric Maliver, 2-3. Eric Spanos, 4-1. Braden Irksa, 2-1. Daniel Maltz, 3-0. So Maryland once again gets depth out of their scoring. Now, Gianforcaro in cage was absolutely incredible for Princeton. 20 saves against 13 goals against. So this game could have been a lot uglier, if that's the right way to say it, then it ended up being. So credit to Gianforcaro for that. Logan McNaney, 10 saves, 7 goals against. He didn't see a whole lot of action because Mother Beepin, Luke Wehrman won. Why did I say Mother Beepin? That's weird. 20 of 23 faceoffs. So actually, credit to Princeton for even hanging this closely, considering they got roached at the faceoff dot that badly. That's an absolute just shit show right there. So Wehrman is the man. He's winning faceoff battles. His team is winning games. Maryland is now 4-0 and looking really good. They will play, their schedule loads up weird. They will play Notre Dame on March 3rd before taking on Brown and then Virginia. So yeah, they've got a bunch of ACC teams that they still have to play. And, you know, I like their chances, man. Maryland is surprising. I thought offensively this was going to be one of their rougher years, but they're starting to figure it out. Defensively, they're as good defensively as they've been, especially with McNaney back in cage. So, you know, and then watch out for Maryland with Wehrman winning. You know, if they're this good defensively and Wehrman's winning this many possessions, they are going to be in every game they play all year long. And you got to watch out. I actually just took out a futures bet for them to win the title, simply because it's like the odds were decent, and considering what they look like right now, man, they're a little bit scary. Next game, we are going to talk about Cornell Denver. Now, this was one, if you watched the live stream Saturday morning, I'm doing a live stream every Saturday morning to do all the previews and everything like that. We're calling it College Lacrosse Game Day, College Lacrosse Live, or I don't know, some shit like that. Anyway, I picked Cornell. Halfway through, I decided, nah, man, I want to change my pick to Denver, because I talked myself out of wanting to pick Cornell, but I was like, nope, that them's not the rules. The rules be you have to stick with your pick, stick with your gut. Let me get a drink of water. And so I did, and then I was wrong. Cornell loses to Denver. Let's talk about it. Cornell takes a 14-10 lead with 4:40 left in the third quarter, and things were looking pretty rough at that point for Denver, despite getting back to within a goal of the Big Red prior to the Big Red's three-goal run. But this Pios team has no quit in them under Coach Brown. Denver would go on to score 7 of the game's next 8 goals, starting in the third and spreading out into the fourth quarter. Noah Manning knotted things up at 14s, sniping one from the wing on a dish from Michael Lampert. Lampert cut on his man from X, quick change of direction, slipped his man. Manning's guy slid down to cover and freed Manning up for an easy strike with time and room. And now it's 14-14. After Cornell answered and regained the lead, it was Manning again, this time from the crease. Once again, it was a dish from Lampert, who once again had gotten a step on his man, drew a slide, found Manning, 15-15. Now, Ryan Giles would score for the Pios just 7 seconds later, scooping up a clean-ass ground ball off the faceoff, just streaked in, picked the ball up, just never broke stride, headed right down the field, buried it, giving the Pios a 16-15 lead, and then the dagger was scored by Richie Connell on a Pios man-up opportunity. Manning found Connell on the opposite side of a field. Very nice cross-field pass, you know, wing-to-wing kind of situation. Connell caught it, loaded, ripped rope, and Cornell would not be able to recover despite getting the final possession, which resulted in a Michael Long turnover, I think with about 20 seconds left or some crap like that. Now, if we dive into the stats on this one, we see Michael Long, 1-4. Spencer Wertheim, 3-2. Danny Cadigan, 3-1. Willem Firth, 4-0. Notice, though, I'm ripping through the top scorers for Cornell, and C.J. Kirst is down here with 3 goals off 11 shots. Now, anyone who knows C.J. Kirst, holding him to 3 goals off 11 shots is a hell of a day. So that Denver defense should be credited with that, because that's just a hell of a job here. If we look at cause turnovers, Silstrop with 1. Let's see. Yeah, no one else. I thought we might see a defenders with cause turnovers, but we didn't. But Denver, in terms of scoring, J.J. Silstrop, 3-3. Excellent day out of him. Noah Manning, as we saw, scored those 2 late goals, 5-1 on the day off just 7 shots. So he did a hell of a job. Michael Lampert on attack, 1-4 for 5 points. And Denver got a bunch of scoring here. Face-off-wise, 22 of 37 out of Alex Stathakis, so that factors heavily in this win. And then we come down into the goalie battle. It was a tough day overall to be a goalie. Both goalies, subpar games. Kleben, though, slightly better save percentage for Denver, and they end up winning this one here. And who was it? Was it DiBenedetto, I believe, that guarded CJ Kurst most of this game? Did an excellent job, so credit to Jack DiBenedetto for the job that he did on Kurst. Just keep, you know, just being on him. Kurst dodged, re-dodged often, and DiBenedetto never went away. The Denver defense helped often, and everything was happy in Denverland. Pios win. Coach Brown has to be really excited because this team is playing really good lacrosse, and now Denver's, every year there's a team that you're not sure how they're going to be. You bet against them, you bet against them, and now Denver's that team this year that I can't bet against here for the rest of the season. Next one we are going to talk about, this was another really good game, Delaware and Penn. Delaware took a 7-4 lead with 12:42 left in the third quarter thanks to Brendan Powers scoring off a John McCurry feed. Long, drawn-out possession that saw Powers wide open by himself. He had plenty of time to step down, let it rip. He was successful as hell in doing that. Pretty sick snipe, actually. Stick side high. I believe the goalie may have even got a piece of it, but you know, we can't be sure. Penn would go on a 5-goal run from here, however, capped by Tynan Walsh scoring on a dish from Luke Dinola with 12 seconds left in the third. That made it 9-7. James Shipley beat his man on a quick alley dodge. Now, that was what set this goal up, was Shipley's nice dodge. He beats his man, draws a slide, he bumps it down to Dinola, who then found Walsh all by himself across on the opposite side of the crease for an easy dunk, quick, just a nice little quick stick. Pretty much a textbook play when you draw a slide and you're kind of in close quarters like that. Dave Petromala, with his famous kind of in-close tennis ball drill, would have actually been very proud in that situation. Penn would go on a 5-goal run from there. I actually already said that one. My bad. Jason Kohler would answer for the Blue Hens, scoring back-to-back goals, the second of which tied things up at nines. A dodge down the left. He got under his man, sneaked it past the keeper, but then Penn would go on a 2-goal run of their own in response. The eventual game winner scored by Casey Mulligan with 2:01 to play, unassisted, a dodge from X up the right. He actually looked tired. It looked like Delaware was trying to shut off and force the shorty to go on the shorty. So he didn't look like he wanted to go, but he could tell, I'm in a situation where I have no choice and I got to go. Delaware is trying to shut them off. He gets a step, and he actually did stop on a dime as he gets up there towards goal line extended. Not a dime, but stopped enough that he was able to dip under his man, get his hands free, get a shot off, stuffs it home. Penn ends up winning this ball game. As we dive into these stats here, very key thing to mention here, J.P. Ward and Mike Robinson held each to 2 goals off of, you know, 7 and 4 shots respectively. So that's absolutely huge that Penn was able to keep those guys quiet. That factors heavily in the win. And then for on their side, Tynan Walsh goes 2 and 5 off 6 shots. So a hell of a day for him. And then it's just depth from there. Luke Dinola, 2 and 1. Cam Rubin, 3-0. James Shipley, 0-2. So they did an excellent job here. Faceoff dot, Penn dominated. 18 of 24 on the day from the faceoff dot. Mac Eldridge, who is the transfer from Virginia, and I had forgot about him. I knew that he transferred. I didn't think he was going to factor heavily or anything like that, but he goes 15 of 19 on the day, absolutely flummoxing Delaware at the dot. Look at that. 6 of 24 is all Delaware won at the faceoff dot. So that is a brutal day for them. So Delaware, hey, you're definitely the better offensive team, but that face-off disparity ends up being the deal breaker here. And then both goalies had good days. Emmett Carroll of Penn, 16 saves against just 10 goals against. Kevin Ellington, 15 saves against 11 goals against. And, you know, as you always say here, if he could have made that 16th save, it could have been Carroll that ended up having 11 goals against and Ellington. But, you know, when you get into these close games, it always comes down to that one data point that you can see where you're like, oh, shit, if he could have just flipped that into 16 and 10, different ball game here, maybe even overtime. And crazy to note, too, and I don't have the highlight to show you, but Delaware scores with, what was it, like 13 seconds left in this game? Yeah, J.P. Ward scores with 13 seconds left to get within a goal. At this point, I had checked out emotionally because I took Delaware as the point-and-a-half favorite, so I knew there was no chance Delaware was going to cover. I also took the under in this game, so I was cool with where the score ended up, but he scores with 13 seconds left. I'm thinking, who cares? What's going to happen? They're not going to score. They're not even going to get a shot on cage. They actually win that ensuing faceoff and hit the pipe, I believe, with like 1 or 2 seconds left in this game. I believe this was the game where that happened. You know what I can do? We can go straight to the play-by-play And then I can just tell you if that happened or not. Yeah, here, shot by Delaware Robinson, hit the post with 6 seconds in this game.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Man, I'm battling severe dry mouth this morning here. I do not know why. But and in the end, hell of a game here. Huge win for Penn. And Delaware is going to kick themselves in the ass over and over and over again for this one, for not figuring out something at the faceoff dot, because really that's where they lost this game. But just a huge win for Penn. And credit to them. Yeah, this dry mouth is brutal. I'm sorry. I'm going to start sounding like I have a lisp and my S's are going to get weird, but we're going to just keep rolling through. All right, here we go. Rutgers and Loyola. Rutgers came out firing on all six cylinders. Tanner Krumenacher, whatever the hell that dude's name is. He gives the Scarlet Knights a 3-0 lead with 5:24 left in the first quarter. A man-up goal that was the result of a Loyola player getting snagged with an illegal stick during the random stick check during a timeout. Dante Kulis, he makes it 7-1 Rutgers, an old-school two-man play. Ross Scott dusted his man at X. Kulis on the low crease playing opposite, kind of mirroring Scott, waiting for his man to lose him. His man lost him. You know, spoiler alert, Scott found him. Rutgers is now taking Loyola to Pound Town. Shane Knobloch, he made it 13-2. Rutgers making it look too easy, dodging down the right alley. No one gets on his hands. He puts it past Luke Stout, and the ass-beating was complete. Loyola would close the game scoring 3 unanswered, but it did not matter. Cole Brams is the man for Rutgers right here. He wins 12 of 18. Matt Suter comes in and wins 3 of 4, giving Rutgers a 15 of 22 advantage at the faceoff dot over Loyola, and that was too much for them to overcome. And it was an ass-whooping right from the get-go here. Dante Kulis finishes the game 3-1 off 7 shots. Ross Scott 2-2 off 4. Shane Knobloch 3-1. Jack Amone 3-0. So, I mean, it's just the usual suspects for Rutgers overall. And with that face-off disparity, thanks to Cole Brams, shit got real quick here for Loyola. Luke Stout, rough day. 8 saves, 12 goals against here. He gets spelled a little after the half, and it does go better for Max Watkinson, but I wouldn't put that on Stout, you know, by any means. And then Carter, I've been talking about how Rutgers has been struggling to figure out defensively what they are. I will say this, personnel-wise, let's remove the goalies from the situation. I watched this game. Defensively, Rutgers, Loyola could do nothing. Like, in terms of one-on-one matchups and Rutgers making sure they're winning those one-on-one matchups where Loyola's trying to get shit going by dodging with the rock, Rutgers handled them all day. They made it easy, I think, for Carden Stoller. But Carden Stoller, 15 saves against 5 goals. That's an absolute incredible day for him. So I wasn't shitting on Rutgers, even though it may have sounded like that in the pregame. What I was saying was just we don't know defensively how they really are. They hadn't played the same schedule that Loyola played. And apparently Rutgers' defense is really good. At least they were really good against Loyola and they won those matchups. So that's a big-time defensive win. It looks like a big offensive rout, and it was to a degree. But that 13-5 score, what that's indicative of is the Rutgers' defense is for real. And if in cage they can play this well, and if this kid here Stoller can play this well consistently and get his save percentage up that high, their Rutgers is going to end up being very good, and they will be a threat in the Big Ten. Next game, we got to talk about an OT game as Brown and Providence went into OT. Providence found itself down 11-9 late in the game against Brown after Jack Kelly scored back-to-back goals. But the Friars would use a bit of magic and rattle off 2 goals inside of 35 seconds to tie things up and force overtime. Michael Chabra played the hero in regulation, scoring a dirty lefty snipe on a half trot from deep to get the Friars back to within a goal, 11-10. Providence would get it back, and Chabra would score again, this time down the right alley. Once again, on the run. Now there's just 31 seconds left in the game. That knotted things up at 11s, which resulted in OT by the game's end. The sudden death goal was scored by Jack Horrigan, dished by Ryan Bell. Bell and Horrigan worked a two-man pick slip from X. Bell went left. Horrigan slipped up the right, almost kind of a bit of a fade here on his defender. He gets a step on his guy, buried it while wrapping around GLE. Looked like he hit it top corner. Very nice placement past the people's goalie. And Providence ends up winning this game in overtime. If we dive into here and look at some stats here, Jack Kelly 3-3. A very good day for Jack Kelly of Brown. But that's not what matters. What matters is Ryan Bell for Providence. He goes 1-5. Richie Joseph goes 4-0. Michael Chabra 4-0. And they pick up the win here. Faceoff dot kind of split, so we won't rip into that too much. But the people's goalie, Connor Thorault, 18 saves against 12 goals against. But it's Providence goalie James Corisanti who picks up 11 saves. He was 50% between the pipes on the day, but good enough to get the win for Providence. All right. Still got, oh, wow, they don't even have a logo here for Vermont. That's weird. Next one we got to talk about, not a close game, but it was Vermont-Utah. Utah ends up taking a 5-1 lead off a fast break goal scored by Jordan Hyde with 6:49 left in the first quarter. The Utes would take a 9-2 lead off a top middle snipe from Carson Moyer with 13:26 left in the quarter. Vermont just couldn't hang at all, as I, myself, and many others expected. Utah's offense, they were humming all day long, and Vermont had absolutely no answer. If we look at what Vermont did, you see, not very much. Now, the crazy thing, I said I thought Utah might be able to handle them at the faceoff dot. Vermont goes 22 of 33. Well, one guy for Vermont does. Henry Dodge goes 22 of 33 for Vermont at the faceoff dot. Vermont wins 24 of 48 on the day, and they still got their asses whooped. So that is not a good sign for the Vermont defense, not a great sign for the Vermont offense, and it is a very good sign for Utah that they could get beat up. They threw five different guys out trying to take faceoffs to pick up a win. Utah did. Ryan Steins, the real deal, man. He goes 5-1. Jordan Hyde goes 5-0. Tyler Bradbury goes 3-2. So the three attackmen for Utah combine for 13 goals and three assists on the day. That's going to really hurt you. And then if we dive down here into cages, Utah goalkeeper Colin Lenskold makes 16 saves against 12 goals against. Actually, a very good day. George Egan for Vermont just got shelled all day. He actually was admirable. 16 saves against those 22 goals against, but the motherfucker got shelled. So what the hell is the dude going to do? Colgate, Villanova. Here was one of the picks that I got right. Yep, I got this right in my picks against the TLN staff. So Villanova wins 15-10 over Colgate. It is Matt Licata, 3-4 on the day for Villanova here. They pick up the win in the goalie battle. We see, yeah, both goalies kind of go 50% here. So Anthony Wilson, he wins that battle by a small margin. And then in terms of the faceoff dot, slight edge to Villanova, it looks like. So nothing serious in that one, but Villanova does pick up the win, and that puts me, I'm only at 2-2 here so far for the TLN picks this weekend. I was 3-2 last week. It looks like I'm probably going to be 3-2 this week. Army, they beat Mercer. Reese Burrick goes goalless, but he picks up three dishes here on the day. And then Matt Chess is insane in cage. Army played three goalies, but Matt Chess didn't get tested a whole lot, but he goes for eight saves against just a single goal against before they bring in the dogs and they let, you know, the other guys get time. So that was a big factor for Army in this one. And then Will Colletti, 11 of 15 at the faceoff dot. Let me say, though, by the time they call the dogs off, this game was over, but still 15-7 against Mercer. Mercer's not looking too bad at this point. You know, they kind of hung in a similar manner with Carolina. Army is going to play Syracuse here next, and thus far, one goal win over UMass, that win over Rutgers after today is looking really good for them, but I'm still, once again, like I wasn't sure, what are we going to see out of Rutgers? You know, the Rutgers hadn't played anyone that really tested them defensively. I'm saying kind of the same thing with Army at this point. Defensively, they're good. I mean, they hold Mercer to seven goals here. They held Rutgers to seven goals, but that's kind of, you know, is Mercer that good that they were able to hang in that manner? I don't know. So against Syracuse, we're going to really find out what Army's all about. And Army is notorious for going into the dome and just playing like absolute dogs. So I'm praying for Syracuse here because they're playing an Army team that is 3-0 and playing pretty good lacrosse right now. But that's going to be a big matchup middle of the week here. I believe Wednesday, Army hits the dome against Syracuse. Navy. Navy's been struggling. They're not a very good lacrosse team at this point. Penn State beats them 13-3. Matt Traynor goes 3-2. Will Peden 4-0 in terms of the goalie battle here. Not too bad. Both goalies above 50%. Now, this is why I wanted to check the goalie battle. After like the first or second quarter, Frassian was hot. He finishes the game 83% between the pipes, 15 saves against just 3 goals against, which is absolutely crazy and good for him. Because someone I think was chirping me on Twitter for not talking about Frassian, but I hadn't been talking about Frassian because he'd been playing mediocre lacrosse up to this point here. You know, 35% against Colgate in the loss, which is terrible. You're an All-American goalie. You can't get a stop against Colgate. That's not great for you. But then 58% in the win over Villanova. That was a very good day. Middling against Stony Brook. But this means Frassian hasn't taken too many steps back here. As the Penn State defense figures shit out, it's only going to get better for Frassian here. So a hell of a game out of him. Penn State wins the shit out of that game here. UMass beat Merrimack. Once again, this is just a Drip King, Riz King, Drip King look, and I do see that he won the battle big time, 14 of 18 at the faceoff dot against Merrimack, and I do also see that the Drip King did score a goal. Caleb Hammett scores a goal here on the day, so that's pretty dope, but UMass picks up the win in that one. What other games do we have here? Let's check some other scores out. We got those ones popping off. New Jersey Tech beats Manhattan by a goal. VMI beat up St. Bonaventure. Binghamton got laced by Lafayette 19-12. Bryant lost to Quinnipiac. We got to look at that one real quick. That's another one. That lost me. I had a 9-game parlay where every other game won in my 9-game parlay except freaking Bryant lost to Quinnipiac. What happened here? Well, Dylan Donnery happened here for Quinnipiac. 4 goals, 3 helpers. John DeLuca, 3-1. Trevor Douglas, 3-0 for Quinnipiac. So they got it done. Goalie battle. Oh, yeah. Mason Oak in cage for Quinnipiac. 19 saves to just 10 goals against. So he got busy. Nathan Lalibert, he goes 19-27 at the dot for Bryant, but it didn't matter. Quinnipiac played some defense. Their goalkeeper was hot. They put up a shitload of goals, and Bryant's defense just couldn't hang. So hell of a job there. Whoops, let's go back here. I want to check the rest of these scores. I don't want to screw you guys. Nope, never mind. It was this one. Boom, we're back. All right, then let's see here. High Point beat up Cleveland State, 18-10. Drexel needed overtime to beat Albany. I failed you guys. I did not get you a highlight for the Drexel Albany. Now maybe I can find it on Twitter. So maybe you will see the highlight for the Drexel Albany game. I don't even know what the fuck am I doing. That's like the P. Diddy dance or some shit. I was doing it like this though, like some kind of weird dad. Fairfield Wagner 14-9. Fairfield Mount St. Mary's loses badly to UMBC 18-6. Richmond beat St. John's 18-2. I didn't cover that one just because, hey, we knew that was what was going to happen. Dartmouth, I was wrong. I picked Holy Cross off hip. Dartmouth beats Holy Cross 14-8. Queens 14-7 over Hampton. LIU 10-7 over Lindawood. And Harvard 13-12 over Bucknell. Air Force beat Stony Brook in overtime. And I'm going to shut the hell up here. Canisius beat Robert Morris in overtime. I actually think I do have that one. I can roll the highlight probably for that one, but we're going to shut up. We're going to dive next into the games that are coming up today. We got Sacred Heart hosting Lemoyne. Lemoyne right now so far has won every Division I lacrosse game they've ever played with that 17-6 win over Wagner. I don't know who's going to win that game. I'm going to make no predictions. Virginia, I have the over in this game here. I took the over for this bet. Virginia against Ohio State. I think Virginia is going to roll. I think they'll probably cover. I don't remember what the spread was. It was in an area that I didn't want to touch it. I think they'll probably cover. I don't expect this one to be all that close, partly because you'd make the argument Tommy Burke for Ohio State could give them an edge at the faceoff dot, but Anthony Gobriel, the Navy transfer, has been excellent at the dot for Virginia so far, 64%. So Burke and Gobriel are coming into this game with identical face-off percentages. And then goalie-wise, Nunes, you know, granted Fiok's been playing well for Ohio State, but Nunes here has a national championship under his belt, you know, so you got to love that experience. And he plays in the ACC, the best offensive conference in the world. You know, fuck the 6'5" gorillas. The ACC is the one with the 6'5" gorillas. It's just sadly, both conferences have gorillas. The ACC gorillas are more intelligent, is what I would make the argument. Now, I'm kidding. I don't fucking know, but, you know, UNC, Virginia, pretty good schools. Duke, pretty fucking good schools. And then we've got Notre Dame and Georgetown. This is another leg in one of my like 5-game parlays. I took Notre Dame. And spread, once again, I have no idea how that's going to hit, but I do like Notre Dame in this game overall here. How long have I been talking for? 32 minutes. I think this is going to end up being a short episode because I'm pretty much done at this point talking about lacrosse. Schedule change, quick schedule change. I don't think I'm going to do the preview show Thursdays anymore. I think what I'm going to start doing is putting out film reviews from the prior weekend's games, or maybe even covering a little bit more of the weekday games on Thursday show, because Thursday show ends up being a throwaway. You know, it's like it's worthless after the games start being played on Saturday. So schedule change. Tuesday, Thursday, we're going to put out film review talking about some of the plays that happened up to that point in each week. And then it'll be Saturday morning live stream. I'll do the previews and then I do the recaps on Sunday. So new schedule. Sunday, big show. You're watching it right now. Tuesday, film review, something that happened over the weekend. Thursday, cover a couple of the weekday games, do another film review of something that happened during the weekday games. Saturday, live stream. Hey, thank God I have no viruses. Saturday, live stream for the previews, and then right back to Sunday doing the recap shows and all that crap. So that is how I am going to roll. Everybody, please go to laxfactor.com. I don't push this very often, but because some of these shows end up being throwaways and because people keep hijacking YouTube revenue and things of that sort, got to make it worth, you know, got to make this worth my time in some manner. So I will say, if you go to laxfactor.com, you can buy a beer mug, you can buy a t-shirt. I would greatly appreciate that. I am going to, I think, put out some sort of swag bag where it'll be a $50 swag bag where part of it would go towards the podcast and then part of it goes towards getting you swag. And we'll do that with like a yearly shirt where I'm going to do up a shirt for this season of Lax Factor. That'll be part of the swag bag. I have these, where is it? I have it here somewhere. I can't find it, but I do have... I've got stick holders. I think as part of the swag bag, it's going to be a t-shirt. I have lacrosse stick holders that pop on the wall that I think I'm going to give out as part of that, and you just drop your stick in it, and it fits perfectly. No branding on it or anything. So that's in the works. So, yeah, that's it. And then, like I said, as always, be sure to like, subscribe, share crap out of this with your friends, and I'm gonna shut the hell up and I'm gonna get on with my day here. So thank you for watching, thank you for listening, and Hoost is out. I think, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I'm out. The Lax Factor Podcast.